Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dune podcast. My next guest is Nada Makhtari, British Yemeni architecture student in her 20s, currently completing her master's at the Bartlett School of Architecture, University College London, a licensed poster artist, prolific in Rhino, 3D illustrator, and Photoshop for properties including Star Wars, Blade Runner, and Dune, whose work has been featured on Bottleneck, Poster Spy, and the Poster Posse, a cosplayer since 2021 for characters such as Fennec Shand from Star Wars, The Mandalorian, and Catwoman from Matt Reeves' The Batman. She's penned an essay on the future of brutalism inspired by Star Wars Andor in May 2023 and has appeared on both the Poster Spy podcast in January and the Genuine Chit Chat podcast just last month. She humorously refers to herself as a Star Wars architect due to her dual passion for both architecture and Star Wars, and recently collaborated with Empire Magazine and Warner Brothers for their Dune Part 2 subscriber exclusive cover on newsstands now. But before and beyond all that, she's an exceptionally erudite and eclectic young woman, an overall creative enthusiast with a unique blend of skills and interests across the spheres of art, entertainment, world culture, and beyond, who I'm honored to consider a kindred Instagram friend. We are delighted to have her here on the show with us today. Nada Makhtari, welcome.
Wow, what an introduction.
Yep.
Thank you so much. I'm honored by you, honestly. That was so lovely.
No worries.
I don't know what to do now.
All good. So, yeah. That's it. Interview over. No, but I am likewise honored that you've jumped on the show. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm okay. Excited.
All right. Yeah. Me too. How's that going, the studying?
Oh, it's going good. I mean, I have one more year left and that'll be mm-hmm. like 5 years of studies for architecture. Mm-hmm. So I'm just finishing my master's. I'm saying just, I still have a year, but
okay,
it's the final one. So I'm trying to make it count. Yeah, and it's going pretty good. I actually did my master's project for my fourth year, which is the first year of a 2-year program for master's. It was actually based on or inspired by Dune, like elements okay. from Dune as well. So I've been in the Dune factor in terms of my architecture as well. I was bringing it in. So yeah.
Okay, well, we have riffed a bit about how you're just coming into Dune. I really do believe this cover with Empire, which is going to be on the screen now in my fancy editing, is the first of many and definitely a symptom of greater things. Take us all the way back. Your earliest resonance and ripples that you've had, kinship with creative works, storytelling, and we'll go from there.
I think I've always been creative. I think it was just like runs in the family. Although we didn't really pursue architecture or art in my family. It was full of lawyers and more businessmen, but yeah, I just remember wanting to do with what my brother did, and he was drawing a lot when he was young, and I would just copy him, and then the same thing with my younger sister. So that's where the creative stance started, I think. And we were Star Wars fans, Disney fans, like we grew up watching all these type of movies, especially Star Wars. And it's kind of funny how it all just comes back as you get older and you're kind of back in your adult life, but then you start to pursue these things all over again. Yeah, and then in terms of architecture, I get a lot like of questions of how I got into architecture. And at this rate, I don't even remember. I just remember feeling like it was the right thing to do. I didn't want to go into maths or something that's non-creative. COVID happened and no jobs after I graduated. So I just started going back into watching movies again and living for the nostalgia. And that inspired me to take up a bit more of digital art.
The cosplaying, how's that been? And has that tied into your sort of recent creativity?
It has, in a way. It literally started out of FOMO, like fear of missing out.
So nice.
I actually went to get a portfolio review done by an artist called Dolly, if you know of it, from the Poster Posse Agency. And my brother has been to these conventions before, but I haven't. So he just went, aren't you going to cosplay? And I thought, oh, I should be cosplaying. So
together.
And then since then, it's been really interesting because in architecture, we always, like in our studies and sometimes in practice more, I think less often now, but we're quite practical with what we want to show as well. So, you know, there's a lot of model making, a lot of casting, very experimental stuff. And it fit right in when I was making things or painting things by hand. I don't paint as much anymore on canvas or paper, but I enjoy like getting a prop done, sanding, all these things. It's quite fun instead of just, having something that's already ready.
I can see that being a nice counterbalance to your primarily digital work, where you get to have that tactile connection, which is great. And it's clearly resonated. What a great kind of combination. I like to do the similar thing. And it's interesting. My sister is the cosplayer in the family.
Yeah.
But if you go all the way back, dial it all the way back to the late 90s, I actually was the first person to start kind of jamming kind of cardboard and stuff together to try and, I don't know if you know Final Fantasy VIII, but when that was coming out, they have these weapons that are half blade, half revolver. And I made that, and I sort of apparently, seeded some kind of kernel for her to go and do that. And I want to actually tie that back to your brother. You mentioned following in his path, or being inspired by him in a way, and him being kind of involved in your kind of creative genesis. Would that be accurate to say?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, he was, because he's my older brother, so I would just follow whatever he's doing when I was younger,
Oh, that's cool. He
like
must have
one
been
of
a
my
cool older
favorites.
brother
Yeah,
then. Nice.
he's amazing. He's great. He still
Nice.
is. But when you were just mentioning that about like the whole cardboard thing, I think it just unlocked that we used to watch, I don't know if you know that old show Art Attack.
I love Art Attack.
This is an art attack. This is an art attack. This is Art Attack. Hello there.
This is Art
We
Attack.
used to, yeah, we used to watch it and then like record it on the VHS for reference, and then we just like paper mache like props and stuff and like play make believe and stuff. So that's quite interesting to hear from you because it just reminded me of that.
Oh.
Yeah, he's currently finishing his PhD in
Oh, look at
material
you.
science engineering. So, oh, biomaterial science engineering. So it's completely different now,
Okay.
but he still gets involved. He still cosplays and has fun. So yeah.
I love that kindred connection between siblings of shared, pop culture references. I'm constantly, whenever I speak with my sister, it's I'm just we sort of speak in quotes a little bit. Do you do that with your brother? Yeah.
Yeah, just this morning actually from Emperor's New Groove. Like that's a comfort movie for me. So
I never liked your
back.
spinach puffs.
Finish them off.
Backing down now, are you, big guy?
Where's the other guy? Yo!
Sorry, I'm late. Oh, what'd I miss?
Well, Yzma just tossed me this knife and asked me to, take them out. And then this guy popped up, and then we waited for you. And quite honestly, I'm
Krauk! Why did I think you could do this? This one simple thing. It's like I'm talking to a monkey.
Whoa now.
A really, really big, stupid monkey named Krauk!
Ouch.
And do you want to know something else? I've never liked your spinach puffs. Never!
That's it. She's going down. Now, now, remember, guys. From above, the wicked shall receive their just reward. That'll work.
Strange. That usually works.
And so does this.
Ah, should have seen that coming. Whoa!
Never.
Exactly.
That's that.
I was like
Yeah.
burning bread. I was like, oh, my spinach puffs. So, yeah.
Sharp rocks at the bottom. Bring it on. Bring it
Yeah,
on.
literally.
Very
Literally.
good. Okay. Well, in some alternate timeline, I guess all of us were neighbors because we were big on the, Emperor's New Groove. I've got a question about the intersection of architecture in your life and architecture in your creative pursuits. So basically, Nada, when's the first time you looked at a building and said, "That's a pretty building"? Like, I could see myself making something like that.
Oh, that's different for me. I can appreciate a building, but I can't see myself doing every pretty building that I see, if that
Okay.
makes sense.
Okay.
Not easily impressed, to be honest. When I went to Istanbul, which is, it's gone back to historical buildings, but I was
Beautiful.
really
Is this
impressed.
your recent trip or one before?
Yeah, no, this recent one was like the first one, so I'm just going back to those
Wow.
references. I found like Othmani architecture really inspiring. I've seen parts of it, like I've been to Cairo before, and I've seen some palaces that were, like during the Ottoman Empire, that were built there. But I think the palaces there and the architecture there was just mind-bendingly amazing.
I love organic Gaudi-esque kind of
Okay.
architecture.
Yeah.
We're still holding off Ray and I on going because we just want that cathedral to be ready and to be finished. You know, I think the
Gonna
latest
take a while.
estimate 2027, I think. So that could be an interesting opportunity. It's like we just run in. There's like the Spider-Man moment of like, wait a minute, you're here too? You know, that
Yeah.
would be fun to just run into you and your
Now
brother or
that
whoever.
I know.
Okay, all right. It is a future overseas like chime in. I think that's always fun. So I just want to jump in quickly to talk about in the description of this episode, you will find links to support relief efforts for the recent awful earthquakes in Morocco. Almost 3,000 people lost their lives, and I know it's a heavy pivot, but I just thought I'd bring that up. Whilst we love and appreciate these wonderful works of art and entertainment, very real, ecological and other kinds
Space
of
about it.
heavinesses. Yeah, or did you know anyone who was there, or anyone impacted at all?
I'm very lucky to say that I didn't know anyone that was
Yeah.
there. So I didn't have to worry about lives that are very personal to me.
Yeah.
But it still it was quite it was really heavy to take in. I mean, just everything that you see online, especially. I'm just feeling a bit helpless at the moment because, like, when it the news first came out, it's that feeling of helplessness. And then eventually, when the aids and the websites start coming in, that's great. But yeah, it's quite. It was shocking. And then the same thing happening also with Libya with the floods that just happened straight after. It's quite a sad time for the
Yeah.
world.
I make sure that I pull myself back to reality, even when I'm in the depths of really enjoying art and entertainment talk. How do you balance, real world and fictional world bandwidth? You know, do you live with one leg firmly planted in one and the other, or is it more of a kind of garnishing on the side for you?
I'd say it's one like
Yeah,
in
same
one
here.
toes and the other. It's been like that for the past few years. Even when I'm working, I found myself in like some internal conflicts of do they take me seriously as an architect if I'm doing all this film stuff on the side? And it's quite funny because on the film stuff, do they take me
Yeah.
seriously? Yes, they do very easily. But in the architecture side, it's almost like I have to own up to like I'm still serious about my practice. I'm still serious about studying and things like that. It's quite a funny mix. And then, yeah, and it's a bit, it was different when I was working compared to when I'm studying now, because when you're studying, there's kind of almost no boundaries to your architecture, no
Yeah.
boundaries to what you want to learn and live in life. And it's almost like a safety place for that. So, yeah, so they kind of encourage these things, but then you have to think, oh, okay, what am I doing after this? That's more realistic, that's more impactful. What's meaningful architecture to me? What can I bring to the table to like reality? And that question happens a lot in my head, so.
It's such an interesting thing that subconsciously, because of how conventions work, you're very inspiring in that way, and that you are coming out very declaratively, and as a default, it's like I am weaving, they are interwoven for me. Your architecture and art and entertainment aspects, frankly, it makes it very dynamic, very interesting, very new, very engaging. So I don't see any negatives, and if anyone from
Thank you.
either world, yeah, feels that there's, whatever. Like I've had people say, well, across the three spheres of podcasting, writing, and art making, for me, that because I engage with all three, that, well, each one only ever experiences like a diluted bandwidth because I'm always focusing on all three. But for me,
Yeah.
I have that, I guess, same leaf, you know, cut from the same cloth of, I can't just do the one thing because I am these many things. And I always find it reassuring and solace bringing when someone is very open and unapologetic about it. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting to get to that point where you become unapologetic about it as well. Mm-hmm. Because at first I was
unapologetic,
very,
yeah.
Like just either embarrassed or just not sure about how people would, you know, react to what I do. Even being online was a new thing for me since like publicly sharing my work. It was very hard at first. Now I just don't care, which is great.
Good.
I just share what I like when I want.
Please always be like that.
Yeah, I should. But yeah, like you said, it's interesting because sometimes I think if I didn't focus this much on, say, the art side, would my architecture side be better? But then I just can't see myself leaving one for the other. And I always get like questions, especially recently, what am I doing after, you know, my studies? What am I doing in my practice? I just kind of don't want to answer that yet.
It'll come. It will.
I like the feeling of I know what I want in like 5-10 years, but I don't want to, you know, limit myself quite yet from the beginning. So yeah.
My fiance and I were talking earlier today about you are who you hang out with. You are the thoughts you most regularly allow boundaries and where to draw them up. Another very appealing and solace-bringing quality, as well as being in architecture, which, by the way, my grandfather was an architect, yeah. Paolo Chessa. I'll have to look up some buildings he's made and send them to you.
I will.
You are open to collaboration. Nada Maktari, the modern pop culture / world culture engaged kind of eclectic multifaceted architect. It's a good model going forward. Yeah
thank you.
Yeah for sure. Do you like to talk about pop culture isolated from architecture? I assume you do. You don't have to feel like you always have to tie it back in, or is it interwoven for you?
I think it depends who I'm talking to. Because actually, it depends on my level of comfort, let's say, as well.
Okay.
As like who I'm talking to. I think I always end up talking about the architecture, cinematography, about mm-hmm. a movie or a show that I'm watching. It's mm-hmm. just, it's what I see now when I watch movies. But I also like to leave things aside if I don't really like something. Like I didn't like the CGI here, or like yep. I thought that set was really horrible and that kind of thing. And that's just me being the critical self, like everyone's quite a critic. But I don't mind leaving that back and like, you know, like leaving it behind if I just want to focus on the story. And I think a lot of people tend to just not do that online.
Or not really.
Just, they're like, oh, I didn't like this, therefore I hate the whole story. I have no faith in it. You know, that kind of thing. But I think it depends on who I talk to, but eventually the architecture and cinematography and all that type of side just comes out as I'm talking. So yeah.
Okay, well, which is indicative of something irrepressible about it and a deep kinship if it just sort of naturally exudes from you. You know about the concept of ikigai in Japanese philosophy, the unification of four things. One is something you are very good at, something society needs, something you enjoy, and something you can get paid for. So when it crosses all four of those, that is your ikigai. And my far less poetic take is, what do you secrete? What just sort of literally just boils from your pores, like naturally, what just emanates from you? And everyone has that natural trickle of who they are. And for me, it is most definitely, you know, art and entertainment / eclectic discourse. You know, you probably seen the Blade Runner podcast chime in and the Star Wars podcast. And I think I'll give myself a decade before I'm in some kind of mental house, maybe, who knows, or a curator for like the film, like Lincoln Film Center or something. But what I want to say with all that, and pardon my reverie, I truly believe your calling is once you've, you know, my fiance, she is a lawyer, 6 years of law school, but she became a private leadership mentor. She channeled all of her law school experience, RameAudio.com. After architecture, this next full year that you'll be doing, especially with your natural resonance with social media and these spheres and, you know, Empire Magazine, etc., I really do foresee perhaps even like set building for you or something in the film sphere. And I would like to ask, am I close or am I hot on that estimation? And if I am, which Star Wars project would you want to contribute to?
I'd just say I'd be open for that. I mean, if the opportunity comes up, then I would take it. I think it would be very stupid not to.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever project that I find I can bring something to. I do get asked sometimes, besides the architecture side, in terms of poster art, if I could do certain things, like if I could be commissioned, for example, for like a horror film or something like that. Like, I get those emails and stuff, but I will not go and say yes to anything for money. I would just
it's about what you like
for this or not. So, and if not, then I'll just reference a few artists that I know that, you know, like, they should jump on that project, or, you know, direct it to them. And I think, like, it always depends. I'd love to do set design at some point in the future. I think it's somewhat my calling as well, eventually.
Okay.
I'm not in a rush.
Okay.
Although it does excite me every time I see a movie, I go, oh, I would have loved to have been like part of that.
Involved? You know? Okay. All right. Yeah. And that's just what I sensed.
There are moments like that. Yeah. There's always moments like that. You know, like, even when you're watching a new Star Wars or new sci-fi, even when I watched Blade Runner 2049, I was just like, wow, I wonder what it would be like to do that movie, you know? So I'm very open to that idea. I don't think it would be something I'd refuse. Whatever works is fine. I'm in no rush.
Okay. Well, fast forward to 2050 when I need an architect to design our house, and there you go. Something like that.
I love that you said design, because I get those comments like, oh, you're an architect, can you build my house? And I was just like, no, but a contractor can.
Yeah.
That question kills me. But design, yeah. 100%, now that you just said that.
There we go then. And likewise, with whatever the Topic Archives doors opened, names passed along. And I have experienced this in firsthand. We were at the premiere of The Rings of Power in September last year. In New York. It was beautiful. Yeah, we were sat next to, completely serendipitously, J.D. Payne, one of the showrunners. We just happened to be sitting next to him. And we just waxed lyrical and controversial and philosophical about what it means to adapt works, you know. And I'm certain Villeneuve would have a lot to say about that. Part two and definitely, I mean, I'm pretty sure part three. So I'll put another hope into the ether, is by the time part three is in development, you'll be contacted. They'll be like, hey, Nada, for something on some level.
I'm fine with how it is right now in the relation to do. But hopefully Denny will be on your podcast very, very soon as well.
Well, you can co-host then. All right. There you go. Boom. You can have, I think he would have many things to talk with you about with his approach, you know, Arrival, and Dune, definitely. Just the architectural sensibility to this man. I think it was a huge part of what unlocked the appeal. And it is very bold to go so brutalist and so functional and straight-edged. I remember seeing the early... And is that something that drew you to Dune? And I guess what has drawn you to Dune in your own way?
Actually, I wasn't even interested in going to see the movie at first. It just completely blew over my mind. So it was my sister that's like suggested it.
And which, shouts out to your sister, by the way. She's also great.
She's great. She actually inspires me a lot. So I always look forward to her opinions, to what she's into. And we're always subconsciously back and forth with ideas. It's really interesting. Although we've not collaborated yet, which is weird. She wanted to see it for her birthday. So it was me, my brother, and my sister. And I said, okay, fine. I just looked at the poster and I was like, okay, sure. I think she tried to show me the trailer, which I wasn't even into watching. And at this point, I just stop watching trailers unless I need to, or, you know, unless it's really important to me. Because I like the aspect of just being, going in, you know, just being blown away. And when we watched it, I just felt completely different. I was in a different world for a good couple of hours and mind blown. And then I came home and I was like, so this is about the Dune book. Maybe I should get the book and start reading it. And then my brother goes, oh, it's on the shelf already. So it's always something that's been there, but not quite discovered yet. And I think that's kind of the thing. It's kind of the thing that Dune, the movie itself, has as well. Like when you go in, I think that was what was impressive for me. It was like this kind of ancient futurism. Everything's
Yes.
been lived in. Everything kind of existed. And it's futuristic, it's a sci-fi, but you just accept it. And this is the
Beautiful.
story. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
it's very well written, and at that I'm like impressed by that, by Denis' work on it, because I've never questioned the space. I've never questioned or criticized like the architecture or like contextually in a desert. Of course it would be like that. Like I didn't think about that, I didn't question those things. And I think that's what kept me really interested in Dune for like since the first time watching it, and then becoming an obsession, and then
Wow.
going into studies and using it as inspiration. So yeah, it that's I've not finished reading the book, I've by
That's
the
all
way,
right.
so
Yeah.
I was going to, and I started reading it while I was studying because I was looking for references on the Gamja Bar, as I used that as a main reference for me, which is the smallest thing that you could get from the architecture, right? But then I thought the second one's coming out, and I kind of went into this blind in a way. I
Yeah.
don't want to know what happens. My sister
I,
does. She
yeah.
sometimes references things, and I was like, don't tell me. I want to experience it. Like, just go with it.
That's great. Yeah, I feel the same way on many levels for what you've expressed, but I have to ask, Frank, he's a very out and proud Islamostan, and I am also a very white Islamostan, and Ray has to put up with it because
Is
she
that what
is
it's called?
it's my word for it. It's like really, really love Islamic culture, Islamic philosophy, Islamic spiritualism. Rumi is an honored word of this house. The delights and respect and reverence I have is very deep. And so when I read someone like a, and again, he's one of the whitest guys, and he's like a Republican too, or whatever he was, but he was a nuanced Republican, Frank Herbert. And he clearly is head over heels for Islamic culture. And to the point where the subtextual implication that tens of thousands of years in the future, one of the most, like the hardiest and most, I guess, quintessential cultures that survive that long. In many ways, he's directly taken just words as they are from, Arabic culture. There's a great and abiding love there, and so I count myself among those Arabic stans or whatever. But I want to ask that for yourself, as a British Yemeni, what's your recognition of that element in Dune? Did it register for you very much? What was the resonance there, if there was any?
Even going to watch Dune, I saw, well, after watching the first one, I saw some controversial like stories of people I know that was like, boycott Dune. It's about Arabs, and they represent us in such a horrible way. And I was just like
Like the whole thing's a love
very,
letter.
very confused to that. They've not seen it,
Oh.
but that's the stance that they took initially. I found that very disappointing from these people to begin with, because I'm Arab, I'm a proud Muslim, proud Arab as well, and like full Arab. I know it says British, but both of my parents are Yemeni, and we come like from it's very generational. And so June was kind of like I went into it with an open mindset. I didn't know what to expect. The words that started coming out were interesting, especially the pronunciation, which was quite different,
Oh
obviously.
dear.
So there were some moments where I was like, this is really cool. Like, okay, they're using, with no idea of the book beforehand, but now that I've read more about Dune, and that, I've been reading more about this on and off thing, I found it interesting. I didn't find it in any way like offensive. I found some moments uncomfortable, personally, but I wouldn't critique it as like the worst thing to come out. It's just kind of being a proud Muslim and seeing some certain moments just felt uncomfortable. And I didn't know why before when I was
Would you
watching it
say
first.
which ones?
I think in the scene when a lot of people saw Paul and they just started like praying towards him or something like
I
that,
didn't like that either. It's
it just made me very uncomfortable. And there, I have to be careful with what I say, of course.
That's okay.
Also the burning of the palm trees, which is
Yeah.
not really something that would affect, I think, a lot of Muslims, but in a way, I found that very, I think the scene was just so powerful. I don't know, maybe it was a more personal stance, but it caused so much discomfort to see those trees
Wow.
burnt in a way.
Yeah.
And I like Yemeni people don't come from the desert mostly. We don't, our land is not desert. So I can't really relate to like the way of living, like the Bedouins live and stuff like that. We have like different types of environments across Yemen. So I didn't see it as like this movie is about Arabs. I saw that there's Arabic used and there's like inspired by. I wouldn't consider it as Arabic. I'd say it's inspired by. I can see it's been inspired by Islam. I think if they introduced it as like, oh, this movie is based off what Islam would be in the future, then I think that would have been a problem personally. Or if this movie is based on Arabs in the future, that kind of thing, like a very big thing, then I would personally have a different stance against Dune, that kind of thing. But I think it was sensitive enough. I think Denis like executed the movie in a very sensitive way.
Okay.
So I that's what I applaud about the movie, to be honest, besides the visuals and everything. I know it's really controversial with Frank and everything that's happened over the years with June, but from my stance, I thought it was acceptable
All right.
and also very interesting. It's nice to see people being inspired by Islam in a different way or Arabs in a different way for once.
Me too.
In addition, I was actually listening to your first podcast
Oh, with
episode.
Hassan. Love that boy.
Yeah, I found that
Yeah.
interesting because it was that before the
Pandemic?
first movie came out. It
Oh,
was
that
before
was
the first,
before. Yeah, it was before the
right?
first film. Yeah.
Yeah, because I found it quite interesting how he, obviously Hassan read the book,
He
right?
did,
So
yeah.
he visualized them as Arabs, which is interesting from one Arab to another. Because for me, when I saw the cast and a lot of people, or like when Hassan was saying it should be Arabs, I was like, but don't you think that would be offensive if Denis
Wow.
casts everyone as Arabs? It's quite interesting just seeing how different people think. But I was
That's
like, if
amazing.
someone said that the whole cast, like those people, the Fremen are Arabs, then wouldn't Arabs take offense to that? Like, it's a question that I'm just bringing up, but
Right.
obviously everyone's entitled to their own
Yeah.
opinions.
Oh,
But
okay.
the cast is great. I think it's a marketing strategy as much as it is of in the end. So yeah.
On the road to Dune Part 2, it would be lovely to have you and Hassan on the same show. And
It would be interesting.
if you've had a fun time so far, or would you want to jump back on?
Yeah, of course.
Kiddlin Howard on Instagram asked in the
What's
comment
up?
section of the post, that's right. What made you get into Dune? How do you blend your cultural and professional backgrounds into this Empire Dune piece?
It's really hard to not implement my own culture sometimes into works. I think it has to be done. I think it depends on the movie, the production, and what themes I can follow and what the brief is. Because as much as I love Dune as it is as a standalone, sometimes I do get excited by seeing like Arab inspired stuff and I was like, I'd love to add some side to me. For Empire, it was just based on the references I was given,
Okay.
let's just say, which are exciting. And honestly, the people at Empire and Warner Bros. Were very, very in love with the first Dune poster that I made
Beautiful.
earlier. And they liked my style enough to just give me, like, they just said, go with it. You know, we love this from your old work. Just have fun if you need this. And then the Chris Lepton, the director, was amazing. So he was my, he helped a lot with art direction. So in terms of references, it's a lot of stuff I can't talk about, which I wish I could, but you'll just have to wait. Because I did get some questions on certain parts of the cover. But I think there's like an ongoing theme, which I didn't initially do on purpose with the circles in my work. But I don't know why I still do, and I find out just a composition that I'm always mesmerized by. I'm not a Sufi Muslim, by the way, but I always get asked that as well because of my circles. Yeah, I think that would be my own references. And then architectural references is also just based on references and what I find catches my eyes, let's say. Yeah, I don't know if I can say anything else.
All right. Okay. That was very diplomatic. And
right?
Warner Brothers.
Maybe I should switch careers.
Yeah, maybe you should, you know. No, I'm kidding.
No, I wasn't. I'm just like so nervous. I'm like, what do I talk about?
That's cool. That's cool. Very, very well handled and navigated, you know? Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, all I can say now, really, at this point, having had your time very beautifully for 45 minutes, I, you know, I don't know how many of my other episodes you may have seen, but I really do love getting eclectic, and we've held off this long, and I think we've done pretty well with that. But Star Wars Andor, Star Wars Ahsoka, many upcoming Star Wars things, obviously a primary source for Dune, for Star Wars was Dune, and we show reverence and respect to that. But I need to, obviously, I mean, we have episode 10, which is what I'm calling it, you know, directed by Sharmeen Obaid Chanoy, which is going to be amazing. First female and non-white director. It's going to be so good. Rey coming back with her Jedi Academy. There is a litany, so many upcoming Star Wars things, but what's your kinship with Star Wars? It is Dune adjacent, so we're not breaking the rules. What's your kinship with Star Wars? And Star Wars Architect is a great portmanteau. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's just based on Star Architect, which I don't know if you've heard the famous Star Architect. Yeah, so I was like, I'm one, but I just like mocked it in a way.
Favorite character? Let's start there.
Oh, that changes.
We were during the Obi-Wan during Obi-Wan we were messaging, and I was like, Nada. Oh my god, you know. It's pretty good.
I mean, but there's a lot of moments where I'm just like, ah, oh, Vader, you know?
I know.
Epic villain. Yeah. And as of late, like recently, it's been, it's back.
So, yeah. Well, Hayden, yeah, I mean, what can you do? We're all in love with Hayden again, and it's hot, like it's heartrending because...
Really bad. I think his performance is really good. I think he received a lot of hate over time, which I never understood. I'm a prequel baby, so that's my
same
I got
right
to Star Wars with my brother and we started with the prequels, and that was, I think, the first tragedy that I've ever witnessed. Was
Aww.
Like episode 3.
Revenge of the Sith, I think you mentioned, like, had an effect on you.
Yeah, and I think it still does. I still have a hard time going back to I don't rewatch as much movies anymore, but I think
Same.
Like when it comes to rewatching Revenge of the Sith, I need a minute. Like I need to be mentally ready. I think Star Wars was just more of a, again, childhood thing. I think my brother got into it from the Lego, which is different. My father watched, I think, Empire Strikes Back when it first came out, or I think A New Hope, one of those, back in LA. And it was just always a thing. And then when the sequels came out, it kind of fell out of Star Wars at some point.
Yeah.
It was like a yes or no. And then starting studies in uni, didn't really think about the movies back then. And then when The Mandalorian came out, it was almost like everyone just got back into Star Wars, including my family. So it was a lot of people find it interesting how, like, It would be me, my siblings, and my parents all sitting down to watch an episode together every
Oh,
week, and no one's
beautiful.
allowed to watch before the other. It's like an unspoken agreement. It's
That's
been
so
broken
cute.
now. It's time timings, but it was a good 2 year, 3 year run. So yeah, it's just always been there, let's say. It's always been something to go back to. And there's always fans, which is really interesting. Like, find a fan of Star Wars in everyone. I found one in my third year tutor for architecture. And there was just a point where I was finishing my degree and COVID happened, so I had to switch mid-semester at the end of the year to online, which is everything that we're against in architecture, like in studies to begin with. It's all printed, fine portfolios, drawings, that kind of thing. So it was a big change. And she would just start bringing in Star Wars quotes at the end of the emails, like, or it's just like motivational speeches that are Star
Oh,
Wars quotes.
beautiful.
So yeah, so it's always been a thing. I don't think there's anything else to it. I've just been obsessed. That's it.
All right, bit of favorite Star Wars quote. Be mindful of the living force, you know, if we're prequel babies, you know, Qui-Gon,
But
you know.
like I like Leia's one, the scruffy looking nerf herder.
That's great.
I use it all the time. So
Got a bit of
yeah.
scruff going on today. Apologies.
Has to happen.
Has to. Well, okay. Well, now this is a curveball a bit. How resonant are you with some of the beautiful, basically photoreal and cinema worthy? I mean, you squint your eyes and not even squint your eyes and you're right there in a film, like things like Star Wars Eclipse in the High Republic and Star Wars Outlaws, which is you know, beautifully female-led, amazing open world. The chance that I think another Maktari next year will be able to go up, and something that I wanted to is to be able to go to some of these planets and just no fighting, just want to admire this, like the art, like Naboo, you know, beautiful,
Yeah.
you know, Italy inspired architecture there. What is your resonance with that on the interactive side? And yeah, I guess we'll start there.
Do you mean like just the games or just
Well, yeah. If I'm basically, what would prompt Nada Maktari to basically say, "Sorry, please don't bother me. I am playing this," even though maybe you might not even be much of a video game person, but they're just getting so photoreal at this point. It is just a genuine blurring of the line between film and game.
There are a lot of moments where I'm like, please don't bother me. I'm
Yes,
watching,
great.
I'm playing, and doing, I'm working. I do get like really into hyper focus mode a lot. So my timelines are quite funny. I've actually picked up, my problem is that I don't have as much time to play games as much as I want to anymore.
Same.
I obsess over a good game. I actually, yeah, part of the childhood thing was also playing Star Wars games, Lego Star Wars,
Oh,
Battlefronts,
beautiful.
all of these with my brother. And I think like just going around Naboo especially was
See what I
quite,
mean?
or even just like in Hoth, like those levels were hard. Yeah, those were really inspiring as well. I started playing Jedi Fallen Order only this summer. I've only got like two levels in, which is so sad. I had to stop to get some things done. But it's stunning, and I just can't wait to start the Survivor one that just, like that recently came out. And there were just moments where I just stopped and like paused the game and grabbed my sister, and I was like, isn't this like my project? Like, this is exactly what I wanted my, Star Wars, not Star Wars, my architecture project to be like this year. And the reference was in this game. So
Wonderful.
it's like, oh, I should have played this game earlier kind of situation.
Could have counted it in your references at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my studio was the one that I chose that year was very much of, watch movies, watch Dune, watch Space Odyssey, play this game, play that game, see what inspires you to for your project.
Beautiful.
Eventually you have to choose one, and that was how my work started. Obviously, you can't do all of them with the timing, but I just thought that was quite a moment where I was like, wow, this like whoever designed this game isn't it, it's so great. It's the
Yeah.
story's great, the levels are great, the mapping is great. I think those things matter a lot, and I see them go hand in hand with movies and like It all just comes down to the narrative again, and how can you make someone feel like they're in it?
Very eloquently put. We spoke with the Daniel Roebuck, who plays Grease, the pilot of the ship that you fly. He actually starred alongside Harrison Ford in The Fugitive, I'm just remembering. But now I have to ask, actually, what is your favorite of the Star Wars films? Is it Revenge, or do you have another?
I just had a debate about this yesterday. I always go for Empire Strikes Back, to be honest.
Yeah, okay.
I think there's a lot of moments there that I was just like, whoa, you know? And just the fact that it was made in that time was, you know, mind-blowing for me. But I think Revenge of the Sith is a close second, sometimes ties in. So, yeah.
Great. I am what Empire first as well. Oh, well, yeah, Empire and Rogue One. Really,
Rogue
really,
One.
Yeah. There's a personal, It's just that very British production, you know, as well. Gareth, you know, Tony Gilroy was taking notes from Gareth, in how he would later go on to insist on physical sets for Andor, which really, honestly, separates it in its own stratosphere as a project from the acting to the
performance. Right?
No, like Luthen's monologue is up there with like the great cinematic monologues.
And what do you sacrifice?
Calm. Kindness, kinship. Love. I've given up all chance at inner peace. I made my mind a sunless space. I share my dreams with ghosts. I wake up every day to an equation I wrote 15 years ago from which there's only one conclusion. I'm damned for what I do. My anger, my ego, my unwillingness to yield, my eagerness to fight, they've set me on a path from which there's no escape. I yearn to be a savior against injustice without contemplating the cost, and by the time I look down, there's no longer any ground beneath my feet. What is my sacrifice? I'm condemned to use the tools of my enemy to defeat them. I burn my decency for someone else's future. I burn my life to make a sunrise that I know I'll never see. Now, the ego that started this fight will never have a mirror or an audience or the light of gratitude. So what do I sacrifice? Everything!
You know, what he says about the tools he must use, tools of his enemy to defeat them.
Yeah.
It's just very harrowing and, yeah, goosebumps. But yeah, so Rogue One, because it beautifully did, honestly, not of the impossible, it made the absolute, made the first Star Wars film deeper and more resonant. I mean, my goosebumps happen every time when Luke is in the trench, but I do think of Jyn, and I think of Galen, and I think of everyone who got him to that point. And it is deeply, it deepens the effect of that moment.
It's amazing how Andor does that as well now. Like, you can't see Rogue One without thinking about Andor now, obviously, because of
absolutely.
The character. Then there's just so much that's happened. Mm. You know,
truly.
Like behind the scenes. But you mentioned the physical sets, and I'm quite one for physical sets.
Yeah,
not just as like an architect or set designer in terms of jobs and stuff, but I think it really does bring a different feeling to a film. Mm. And just going back to like Andor, I think you've seen how obsessed I've been about that.
Well, your essay, it's in the link in the description, by the way, if you want to read that essay. Yeah.
Thanks for doing that. Mm-hmm. It's got some grammar mistakes, but yeah, I just put
Sorry
it up anyways.
Oh boy. Whatever.
But I did it was a great grade that I got for it, to be honest, and I'm pretty proud of that essay because I just remember telling my tutor, like, it was for a film and architecture of module that I was doing. And I remember going back and forth with him a few times on different films and that kind of thing. And it was like 6 weeks, I think, every session be like, so have you thought about what you want to write about? And I'd be like, maybe Blade Runner, maybe Grand Budapest, like all these films are iconic and architects love. I just was like, you know, just trying to like push myself to finding something into that. And then he was like, no, you're going to do that picture that you showed me in the first introduction that we had, the Andor one. And then I was just like, it's still in production. I have nothing to work with. And he's like, we'll work it out.
Nice.
I almost got some help from Lucasfilm, but unfortunately, because it was still airing, it was really hard. But I think physical sets really, and filming locations really, really add to a movie, like on a different level. I think you can't, I really am impressed by the volume and CGIs that are used and stuff like that, especially in like The Mandalorian, I think was epic. And yeah. it was an interesting way to work in film. I still am a bit of like a physical set film location type of girl.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And the same thing with Dune, just going back to that real quick. Like it was just like reading about that because I was looking for references and stuff for my studies. I think Dune was really interesting because you just can't compare it to Star Wars,
even though
it inspired it. It's just a whole different theme, genre, type of thing. And I think that if you start comparing it, you're just going to give yourself a headache.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I will like fight for Dune is that the sets, the filming location, cinematography, again, Greg Fraser, is that right? Yeah, I think he said it right. It's just different. It's like a whole different level. So yeah, I'm gonna stop before I go into the Arrakis.
No, that's okay. That's all right. Again, very skillful navigating of NDA waters. You know, I'm now tempted, but now I know that you have a policy on no spoilers, but it's so funny. You have some access to some materials and knowledge that you can't share, but now I'm cognizant of, I know where, I mean, it was shared, so I know where certain scenes were filmed, and I'm very excited because, I guess I'll just leave it at that.
I know, where the first movie scenes were filmed, and I read about how, the buildings in Arrakis, like what was the idea behind it and what they've referenced off, because it wasn't, from what I've read from the production designer, there wasn't much to work with in the book besides just knowing that it's like unbearable heat. And I think the response was very interesting because they responded to the book and for the adaptation as architects, like, you know, like they were like, okay, this is like a desert, you can't live here, it's unbearable type of thing.
Yeah.
What would the architecture look like? And instead of going into references like, oh, Star Wars or Tunis all over again, and that, sorry, Tunisia, I said it in Arabic, all over again, then I don't know. I found very like the whole architecture of that very interesting. It's like a breath of fresh air. So yeah,
it really is. As soon as I saw the brutalist look, it immediately, the James Cameron brain activated, where, because he's such a, we do the Avatar podcast as well, he's so functionally minded and engineer minded that when approaching whether it's a character's like respiratory system or just the fine granular things that really grounded in reality, I think of, well, if it's a desert planet, then there's no point in ornamentation because the winds will just blow it away. There's no point in curves because, again, the wind will level it and the harsh sort of sandstorms and such. So that brutalist look anticipates the climate, or maybe even adapted to it. And I still, because we have some brutalist buildings here in Canberra, I know, you know, Andor, the Brunswick and the Barbican, which, by the way, Barbican, such a brutalist name, really love it. But are you do you like brutalist architecture, like as a, do you aesthetically connect with it, or did you just sort of lift that out to talk about in the context of Andor for your essay?
I've always been interested in brutalism. I've found that, like, I think since I started my first year. But it's kind of funny because I wouldn't live in a brutalist estate.
Neither would I. It's so funny. Neither would I.
I don't think anyone would want to. But I always find the stories quite interesting. So I knew about the Barbican ages ago. So when I first saw it in Andor, I just literally started screaming, like, it's the Barbican! Everyone's shutting me up. Like it literally, I think it was like a column or the bricks, and I was like, I know this place. I've been here before
Must have
because I
been
had a
surreal.
project set on there in my second year. So I've been at the Barbican like in every season, hating the weather there, everything. So I've known it. But the Brunswick was it was something that was kind of like right under my nose because it's quite near my uni. And when I saw it after the like I saw someone reference it on Twitter to the like from the Andor episode to the Brunswick, and when I searched it up and it was like a 10-minute walk, I just went for it.
Amazing.
But I find it so interesting how it's used in like dystopian settings. And it's continuously uses that. No one sees brutalism differently anymore,
No.
except for like the early stages of brutalism when they were like, this is our utopia, you know, this is the way of living, and how far that's fallen. I find it so interesting.
Agree. Brutalism has a unsurpassable and irreconcilable impersonality. It's impersonal, and humans, at least by and large, that I've observed, quite like to kind of gather objects to themselves and ornamentation and tell stories. So when I again see it in something like Dune, I know that everyone living in that place, there's an oppressive quality, because they know that they're not here for comfort. They're here for function and to fulfill a role, which is the harvesting of the spice. And yeah, it's like you at all times, you're aware that you are a guest here, and it's the sandworms who own the place, and the Fremen who own it.
In a way, it's kind of interesting because when you mentioned the ornamentation, the only ornamentation that there are is the storytelling inside the Arrakis, like the buildings. Because there was like the Dune one, the with the worm, the sandworm, which is
Yes,
what
beautiful.
inspired me, to be honest, for the first poster. But it's quite interesting because they use it in a way that's like kind of like you're not welcome here in a way where you know this is your threat is like right in your face, or when they use it for the assassination attempt, kind of just cuts through. I think that's really interesting as well. In terms of lighting, I think like Brutalist architecture has it just sets a different tone for
It
lighting
does.
as well. I won't go into that because then that's just
No,
going to
that's
be boring.
okay. All I'll say is light loves brutalism, because light casts these very straight angular lines. And I obviously, as soon as Denis made Blade Runner 2049, like the sequence in the archives.
Just checking in on an old serial number.
Confirmation DNA?
I have hair.
Oh, an old one. Pre-blackout. That's gonna be tough. Not much from then. And what's there is thick, milky.
You can customize them as much as you'd like. As human as you want them to be. But your operation is strictly a drill site, isn't it? I wouldn't waste your money on intelligence. Attachment or appeal? Unless you'd like to add some pleasure models to your order. Would it be possible to reschedule this call, please?
Everyone remembers where they were at the blackout. You?
That was a little before my time.
I was home with my folks. Then 10 days of darkness. Every machine stopped cold. When the lights came back, we were wiped clean. Photos, files, every bit of data, gone. Bank records too. Didn't mind that. It's funny it's only paper that lasted. I mean, we had everything on drives. Everything, everything, everything. My mom still cries over the lost baby pictures.
Well, it's a shame you. Must have been adorable.
Pretty fractured. Not much on it. one of the last gens, pre-prohibition. Standard issue, made by Tyrell.
And?
Unremarkable.
Unremarkable.
There must be something else we can find, Brian. Another prodigal serial number returned. A 30-year-old open case finally closed. Thank you, officer. I'm here for Mr. Wallace. I'm Love.
He named you. Must be special.
I'm here for Mr. Wallace. Follow me.
The ancient models give the entire endeavor a bad name. What a gift, don't you think? From Mr. Wallace to the world. The outer colonies would never have flourished had he not bought Tyrell, revivified the technology. To say the least of what we do.
I see you're also a customer. Are you satisfied with our product?
She's very realistic. Thank you.
Here. All the junk is in here.
Lucky for you, Mr. Wallace is a data hoarder.
No one's been down here in ages. Sorry about that.
For that, it sold me on just him, really. I mean, then I think I sent you that article about his kinship with architecture. He's such an architecturally aware director, and we love you. We love you, Denny. Hire Nada, please, Denny, if you are listening to this. All right. Nada, you have been so generous with your time. We're just over the hour. I have a cheeky question. What's a question you've never been asked ever that you'd like to be asked and that you'd like to answer?
Just thinking, has there been any question that anyone left?
Oh, well, like, this can be outside of any, not even art and entertainment. It could be in personal life. It could be in culture. And
the thing is, like, if I'm not questioned online, I'm questioned at home.
All right.
I'm not sure. I have some plans that I don't want to share yet, like, that relate to my personal works or kind of heritage, let's say. Mm-hmm. It's like ongoing projects that haven't quite hit me yet. And like, usually my ideas come at night, 3 a.m. type of thing.
Yeah, same.
So I have some things planned, but I don't think I'm ready to bring it up. Let's just
No worries. All good. Well, what we do have I'll start again. I was going to say something about how you've alluded to having seen a certain amount of Dune Part 2 material. But again, I also want to be respectful and not even get people jumping on, you know, after they've heard this episode, you know, haranguing you or anything. And we've just for the podcast, for the record, yeah, Nada's not going to say and won't say anything that she's seen. But, I like this because I'm a bit of a tweedy person. I like to think of how, like, when the film comes out, like, oh, what's going to go down on the day and that kind of thing. So do you have a plan for when you go and see Dune Part 2? Is there a certain gang that you'll bring, or will it be going with your brother, or will you see it a few times? And if there's a double screening, will you see Part 1 then Part 2? Is that sort of a plan? Mm-hmm.
You know, I've not thought about it since the delay.
Yeah.
The moment it got delayed was also the day before the Empire cover came out, so I was really nervous about that, and then everything just kind of dissipated for me. I just want to watch it in IMAX. I think that's like, for me, I didn't do that for the first one, and I think if there's a double screening, I definitely will do that.
Very good.
So yeah, I think I'll just try to enjoy the movie, probably with my sister and brother again, because just because we did the first one. And I like setting traditions, like who I go with, for anything. It's just, it's something that I do. So if I see an exhibition that relates to architecture with one person and I enjoyed it, I'll try to do that every now and then. But it's a bit weird, yeah. Yeah, I think I'll do that. I want to see an IMAX and just be a part of the excitement, the hype for it. So yeah.
Well, I'm sending you now on Instagram. I don't know if you have your phone on you, but here in Sydney, the largest IMAX screen in the world. So speaking of IMAX, I don't know if that's come through, but right in the center of this building, it's called The Ribbon. They've been building it, now to get this, since 2015. So as soon as their last film that they exhibited was Star Wars The Force Awakens, it is essentially a Villeneuvean marvel, just out there on Darling Harbour. It's a combined hotel and IMAX screen. So if you happen to be in Australia, visiting with your family, tickets are on me on behalf of the Topic Archives, and we would see our way to hosting some kind of dinner slash off we finally made it to this point sort of occasion for
That would
whoever
be epic.
you. So that's officially on the potential timelines if we had like pull Atreides and we can see
Very,
all the
very
different
tempted
timelines.
now.
All right, well, please do. If
Find an
it's
excuse.
okay, but that's, well, I mean, Australia, I love Australia and I love the UK. And our excuse for 2015, we actually went to London for Ray's friend had a wedding in Oxford, so that was beautiful. That was my excuse, but now you officially have been invited and have an excuse to come to Australia in March
And the
if that
same goes to
happens.
you. If you ever want to come, I'll take you on an architecture tour. Maybe not as fun, but
Okay, no, that's cool. We'll
you like fangirl together.
we can fangirl together, and I will seek to out fangirl you. But what I want to ask is, what if we did a road trip to the dam in Scotland? That would be nuts. Like in like a
Oh.
bus, could watch all of Andor on the way. I don't know. Just the fact that you're connected by landmass to so many now established, beautiful locales like Aldani and all of that stuff in Scotland was so beautiful. Okay. Nada, how do you think we did in terms of maintaining the Dune podcastness of this episode, or did we veer too much into Star Wars for our own good?
We did okay.
We did okay.
What do you
Okay.
think?
I think
It's bound to happen.
it was bound to happen, and they're intrinsically linked, but I'll give myself a B minus, and I'll give you an A plus. There you go.
No,
Boom.
you should give yourself an A plus as well.
You're too kind.
Do you want to talk more about too?
Well, yeah. Well, hey,
I
no,
don't
we could.
mind. We got a bit more.
Oh, really? Oh, well.
Just be one for the podcast. Like, it's fine.
I guess I could ask you if you know about Christopher Walken as the Emperor. You know that he's playing the Emperor.
Yes,
In
I've heard.
you have heard. Do you know the fun bit of trivia, which is also British based because the singer is British? He was in that music video where it's Christopher Walken dancing and flying around. Have you seen that one? It's a famous music video.
No, I
Okay.
haven't.
Well, please, as your fun homework, fun work, look it up. It's called Weapon of Choice.
Okay.
And if you just want to have, before going into Dune Part Two and you see, the Padishah Emperor just like dancing around. But there's a line in the song called Walk Without Rhythm and You Won't Attract the Worm. How about
Yeah.
you mentioned talking more about Dune? Let's bring you on I guess a few months down the line when we're a bit closer to the film coming out. That's for the Dune podcast. You do hold space quite well in the podcasting arena. I think you're a natural at
I'm
it, I would
trying.
say.
I'm honestly trying. I'm doing this for my confidence, really. So
Oh,
I
really?
usually
Oh,
so
you're a
nervous for
natural.
podcasts. So
No, just a
I'm
conversation.
trying. It's just
Well,
like I'm challenging myself this year a little bit
oh,
more,
yeah?
going.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're trying.
Right. Well, in that process though, did the heckles come down and were you able to let your head down a bit as we went along and you enjoyed yourself?
Literally, yes.
Literally?
Don't
Okay. Well, I'm happy. Then I've done at
worry. I
least.
think you're quite a natural host. It's very nice. So yeah.
Appreciate that. Well, the Star Wars podcast, the Blade Runner podcast, And I think, honestly, after your Catwoman, cut to that in the edit, the DC podcast, what did you think of that film's depiction of Gotham?
Oh, it was perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so the good. Batman movie. It, again, a movie I didn't think I was going to enjoy because I love Christopher Nolan's trilogy so much. It was, again, like a childhood thing. Maybe a bit too much for a child, but it was, yeah, who cares about ratings at some point. I just remember loving those films like so much, especially that was my introduction to Batman, was through Christopher Nolan. And I was just like, no, I don't really think we need another Batman movie at some point. Went in without the trailer, was mind blown. And then, yeah, again, it was so different, incomparable. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, myself, as a kid, I had two things that I hyper-focused. We share that aspect of hyper-focus. In 1996 or 7, when the Phantom, Batman and the Phantasm came out, there were two things in my lounge, because I guess you become hyper-focused of it because you spend a lot of time there. But we had the vinyl for Amadeus, the film. Have you seen Amadeus, by the way? It's a beautiful... there'd been, you know, Batman Begins takes notes of that, in its, especially in its lighting and cinematography. It is a biography of Mozart. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Very, very striking. If you were to... I could send it to you now, but the main poster of Amadeus is very striking. And I had that in the lounge, and then I had my little Batmobile. So, and so, like, extremely serious, and you could even say highbrow art right there, but then married together on, like, the earliest formative level with kid stuff, you know? So I'll just send you the poster now. So definitely another fun work homework. Check out Amadeus. Very beautiful film.
Definitely.
And so when I saw the tone and the...
That's a gorgeous.
You know, the haze, that red, warm, glowing orange haze that the film is imbued in. Found that. I just connected on, like, a deep childhood level, and very much looking forward to the Penguin, you know? Basically,
yeah,
right? Colin Farrell getting to be Tony Soprano, essentially, you know?
So cool.
And the Sisterhood. Oh, we almost didn't talk about the Sisterhood. Nada, are you looking forward to the Sisterhood?
Yes, I am. I've heard about it. That's in the works.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore.
The strike.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. I've used this idea of, like, the Bene Gesserit and the Sisterhood type of thing as a reference in my works as well.
Circles.
I find it so interesting. I don't want to go too much into it, but all these, like, political plays that they take in and stuff like that, it's quite... I find it very interesting. So, yeah. Need to be careful with saying, not just in terms of the movie, but just, like,
Want to need to consider now, that's three amazing pirouettes that Nada has done away from NDA. whatever Warner Brothers rep is watching this, I think that deserves maybe a hamper or something. It's like, thank you very much, Nada, for, you know, staying in your lane. No, I'm kidding. Nada, you've been such a pleasure. I feel like I met a friend from another timeline or something. It's really great. Oh, you know?
Same feeling, honestly.
Too easy. Well, I am now going to take the onus off of you. I'm going to say, look, everyone, go to nadamaktari.com, x.com/nadamaktari, tiktok.com/@nadamaktari, 2.3k followers. Let's get it to 3k. Why not on TikTok? linkedin.com/in/nadamaktari, and instagram.com/maktariarchitecture, which always sounds kind of cool because of the flow of those words. Certainly appreciate you coming on the show. All the best for all of your future endeavors, and I hope to welcome you back onto the Dune, Star Wars, Blade Runner, DC, or any other podcast that you'd like to come on. Thank you, Nada.
And drop a message whenever. It has been an absolute pleasure, so thank you so much.